Boys do it. Bees do it. Even educated fleas do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love.
But since it's that time of year again, the season of love and all that, the staff of To the Best of Our Knowledge decided to do it again. Let our listeners do the talking. Today, true stories of love at first sight from you. Last year's stories were amazing, and we think you'll like this year's batch just as much. Here's Evelyn Gildrey Voiles.
I first saw Paul at an audition for an improv group in college. He was blonde and adorable and really, really funny and very talented and extremely smart and very, very aware of it all. And I was immediately impressed and immediately went about trying to prove I was not impressed. I picked apart everything he did at the audition in my head while he was doing it, telling myself that everyone at the school was smart. He wasn't special. The sound effects he was making were irritating. I really, really worked very hard at not liking what he was doing. We both got in the group, and for the next year, I just talked and talked to my roommate constantly about Paul, about how hard he worked and how much he tried to do a good job and how annoying that was and how I just wanted to be his friend, but I would never date him. And this became my mantra. I will not date Paul. I will not date Paul. I will not date Paul. No one said I should date him. No one brought it up. I just decided that I was not going to date him. The next year, the improv group spent a month in Chicago, five of us living together in a very small apartment. Paul and I spent a lot of time together. He read instead of going out. I read instead of going out. We shopped for the other people. We cooked for the other people. We started behaving like an old married couple. And all the time, I kept on repeating, I'm not going to date Paul. I'm not going to date Paul. I'm not going to date Paul. We talked about people we liked at school. We never used any names. And we both tried to get each other to date the next door neighbors. A week before we were supposed to leave Chicago, I was making out with the next door neighbor, and suddenly it hit me. Lightning bolts, voice of angels, all the traditional stuff. I was in love with Paul. I was in love with Paul, and he was upstairs talking to the other next-door neighbor, and I was so upset. I ran upstairs. Paul was all by himself. He was doing the dishes. I said to him, I like somebody at school, and I don't know what to do about it. And he said, when you get back to school, ask the guy at the movies. So I said, do you want to go to the movies when we get back to school? And he looked at me and grinned this big, huge grin and said, I knew you liked me. We got married 4 years later. We've been married for 4 years now, and he is still so smug about the whole thing.
For George Dreckman, Cupid struck through the politics of the heart.
I decided to become a campaign manager of a forlorn hope mayoral race because my past experience had been that the campaign manager always gets the girl, and I definitely was out trying to find a girlfriend in my new town. And one day, near the end of the campaign, I was sitting in the office with a couple of other campaign workers, and we were just talking big and sitting around a table. In another room, a woman was working on some campaign signs, and she walked in and wanted to know what we were doing sitting around while she was hard at work making window signs. And we definitely got the hint that we should get up and help her, and I turned around, and there was Diane with her long black hair and her hands all covered with ink, and I fell in love immediately. She was just everything I could hope to find, I thought. She was very pretty, she was talented, and definitely very self-assured to come walking into a room and tell the people who were running the campaign to get up and get to work. That's where I met Diane, and sure enough, it's 20-some years later, and we have two kids, we're still married, and it's just a wonderful thing.
The way you wear your hat, the way you sip your tea, the memory of that, no, no, they can't take that away from me, the way your smile just beams.
Sarah Lenz of Berkeley, California, found true love on the 4th of July.
When I was a kid, I was such a hopeless romantic, and I always had these dreams when I was growing up that there was this boy who would always adventure with me. He had straight brown hair, and he had blue-green eyes, and he would always be there in my adventures, in my dreams, and I always thought that someday I would meet this boy, and when I was in junior high, I would fall in love with every straight brown-haired boy with blue-green eyes who was adventurous, and they just never could tell where I was coming from. I was so head over heels in love with them, and they were like, who are you? By the time I was in high school, I was pretty disillusioned with that and decided that the real world didn't have true love in it. But when I got out of high school, an old friend who'd been in love with me from afar confessed his love and asked me to marry him, and I agreed and thought, oh, this is the real Prince Charming. He's this straightforward engineering type, and he loves me, and everything is good in the world. So we decided we'd get married in a year when he graduated from college. So that summer, right after I graduated from high school, for 4th of July, my best friend had a 4th of July party, and she invited me to come, and I didn't really want to go because I was going to be married, and I didn't want to meet anybody new, but I told her I would come just so she wouldn't be alone. And as I was driving down the street to go to the party, I was looking for a parking place, and I looked up at the house, and these two boys were coming out of the house. And one of them looked up at me, and he was laughing about something they'd been talking about. And the minute I saw him, it was like the air got knocked out of me. I lost my breath, just, and I chided myself, oh, no, wait, now you're going to be married. You don't need to be distracted by any other cute boys. But just this reaction was so incredible. He was cute. He was the kind of cute in high school where, you know, you think this guy can, he could have any girl he wanted, and he was kind of cocky. But it wasn't the cute. It was just, I don't know, something about him just, it affected me. And so I went and parked the car and tried to calm myself and went into the party, and fortunately, he wasn't there. He'd left. And so I just calmed down and sort of relaxed and was meeting people. And all of a sudden, he walked into the room, and I saw him again, and it was the same reaction. And, you know, I wasn't prepared for that kind of reaction. I'm like, no, wait a minute. You don't need to meet anybody. And so I spent the entire evening actively ignoring him, acting like some kind of little schoolgirl. Every time he'd walk into a room, I'd slip out without him noticing, or if I saw him coming, I would go the other way. Then later the party moved to my house. My parents were out of town. Finally the party started winding down, and there were only a few people left, and he was one of them. Then some more people left, and suddenly there was only me and him. So I just tried to be calm, and he sat down at the piano and started playing. And the music was so beautiful. He just played. It was just his own music, and he just played and played and played, and I completely relaxed. I thought, okay, I can just listen to this. This is so gorgeous. And I just lost all my agitation. And then we started talking, and I told him all about my fiancé and how wonderful he was and how happy I was. And then we started talking more, and it was this kind of conversation where he had thought of all those weird things that I'd thought of that I didn't think anybody else had thought of before. And he had all these dreams that were the same kind of dreams that I'd had. And it was like this conversation, you thought of that too. I've never known anyone who thought of that before. And we just talked and talked and talked. It was just this endless, wonderful conversation. And suddenly the birds were singing and it was morning. And I looked into his eyes and I just knew that I had to reconsider my engagement to this other man. I just, there was something here that was undeniable. And Max and I have been together from that moment on. This last 4th of July, we celebrated our 20th anniversary, and I'm just grateful every day to look at those blue-green eyes that are so sparkly and know that he's the love I'd always wanted.
Thanks to everybody who shared their love stories with us. And we'll leave you with our favorite story from last year, from listener Ed Walker. Happy Valentine's Day.
What was probably remarkable about my initial love at first sight of experience was that I was about 7 or 7 and a half years old at the time, back before I had any business being interested at all in people of the feminine persuasion. And I knew even then that girls with big eyes, big dark eyes and dark hair, intrigued me. I grew up in a farm outside of Morris, Illinois, about an hour southwest of Chicago. From time to time, we would visit some cousins in Chicago. They lived by this monster airport called Midway. And what was a nice diversion from the usual is that on this day, we took a drive. And we wound up down in the Calumet Harbor region, the industrial region of South Chicago. Now, three things there impressed me that I saw and stayed with me. One was I was just amazed by the sheer size of the steel mills. I couldn't believe that humans can make anything that big. The second thing that caught my eye was a church in a small clearing. As we drove past the mills, there was this church that had onion-shaped spires on it. Then the third thing was her. I saw her a few blocks down the street. We came up to an intersection, driving along. I was in the back seat on the left-hand side of my dad's 49 Dodge, and on the corner was a little girl with huge eyes and dark hair standing by her bicycle. She seemed to be about my age, and behind her was a bowling alley house, a thin, long, and tall, gray slate. But it was her that I noticed, and as we drove past, I kept looking, and I turned and craned my neck, and my sister made some comment to the effect that should we have Dad stop and so he can go out and talk to her, and I probably told her to put a sock in it or something equally mature. I know the adults giggled and snickered, but we went on, but she stayed with me, and for probably about 2 decades, her image would pop up now and then, probably when we get a lake breeze. Down on the farm, we would, once in a while, they'd get the wind out of the northeast, and we get the a cooling breeze off Lake Michigan, and along with it came the faint smell of sulfur from Gary, Indiana, and South Chicago mills. And that's probably what prompted her to pop back in my mind now and then. I would think, you know, who was she, and what does she look like now, and what school was she going to, what's her name? And well, I had to wait a lot of years later until love at first sight happened again when I was when I saw a young lady in college down at Western Illinois University, across the student union, across a crowded room, so to speak. And she, of course, had dark hair, short dark hair and huge eyes, long, graceful neck, the Audrey Hepburn image. Now, to make a long story a little bit shorter, months later, the timing was right. We had a chance to meet. We had a chance to talk, and I asked her out, and we were married 14 months later in 1971. 2 years later, we got word via a telephone call that my wife's grandmother had passed away down in the Chicago region. So we traveled down to the in-laws' house in Blue Island, which is a suburb just south of Chicago. We parked in front of my in-laws' house. My wife got out of the car right away, went into the house, and I opened the trunk to get the luggage out. And honestly, at that point, a slight breeze came from the east, and I could actually detect the smell of sulfur again, and that little girl came up in my mind. But it was fleeting, and it was soon forgotten. Now, ironically, the funeral service was to take place in a Serbian Orthodox church close to the steel mills, the very same church that I had seen when we were riding through that area so many years prior, the one with the onion-shaped spires. And we parked at the church, and I remember walking up to the steps to it, and I told my wife, "This is memorable. I've been by here before." But it wasn't the time for memory lane chatter, so I made a note to share with that with her later on, at a later date. When the memorial service was ended, we left the church, we got in the procession of cars, that followed the hearse and the pallbearers' cars. So as we traveled north, I saw that house. And I said, I looked around and said, my gosh, that is the same. This is it. This is where I saw that girl. And we approached it slowly, as funeral processions do go slow. And I turned to my wife, and I kind of pointed to the house, and I was just going to say to her, remind me later on today to tell you about this house. But I didn't get the word out, because she pointed to the exact same house, and she says, see that house on the corner? That's where we used to live when I was little, before we moved to Blue Island.